Show here on Raglan Community Radio, and I want to welcome Ngaruna Renata to the studio. Good morning.
Atamari e te whānau whānui o Whangaroa, and what a beautiful way to make an entry into this this kōrero with Taisha Tari, one of our beautiful māreikura, who does so much magic with her extraordinary angelic voice. And that waiata that you hear each fortnight when I appear with my voice is Taisha really emphasizing that kupu karanga, and I'm going to expand on that. So a kai karanga is really usually a female. We won't get crystallized about that, but usually it's a female, and there's a lot of reasons why that it belongs in that to the feminine. Female is quite definitive, but feminine is not like you must be embody a female. It's a feminine. You have the feminine very present in you. Therefore, you offer that that calling, that magical, sacred calling, karanga, which is to really herald something, bring something forward, welcome something, something. Could be whales.
But it was you this morning.
It could be people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We do karanga to waka on the shore when they're passing, those kind of things. There's many opportunities where karanga, which is the calling out to energetically to those on those occasions, where it's really an honouring of saying, please come forward, welcome. We welcome you. We want you to come forward and come into this wānanga, if it's a karanga, a kai karanga. There's a lot of discussions around that whole relationship of karanga to the feminine, as in when is a suitable time. So, like, how am I going to put this? You have different part stages in your life as a female, and ideally you would be more of an elder in terms of where you are in a grouping to offer that, but not exclusive. It's not exclusive. But I generally, myself, when I was teaching, I didn't teach karanga to young females. It wasn't appropriate.
Okay.
Well, I wasn't taught that. You do that unless they were to remain under your guidance for quite a long time so that they could come forward and be that oro, that sound, that voice, and know what they were actually saying, which is really, really important to actually know what you're saying, the heart of what you're saying, in terms of the karanga. And I know many people have had different experiences when they heard the karanga on the marae or in places where there's a sacred ceremony that will be performed, and how that unfolds, and they definitely feel the modi of it, which brings me to that aspect of sacredness, which I'm just going to touch here around tapu anoa. So there's different aspects of our life story where tapu I think has been really, really misunderstood, and therefore noa will be misunderstood. So we associate.
So these are two things, tapu and noa.
Yeah, tapu and noa.
Because I got confused when you said it off the air. I thought, I thought dumb stuff. So anyway, just in case anyone else was, it's two things.
Tapu. So you generally don't associate food with tapu, or tapu means that food is noa. Food is where you socially meet together and take food together, and that's considered noa. It's an activity where you engage with, you enjoy the food together. and digest it, you know, like just enjoy it. But if you were in a state of tapu, you're not likely to be eating food.
Okay.
Yeah. Tricky. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, you're right. You're right. I guess tapu probably has been misused because it's in common usage by people who are only English speakers. Like, we all use it and think we know what it means. It has some kind of meaning to us.
It's remaining in a state of readiness that if there is activities that require a very special ceremonial attention, then you are totally prepared and you can participate genuinely long before you arrive at the what they call the formal gathering. You have done much preparation for that, so you remain in a state of tapu.
I guess I'm used to hearing about it as a certain place is tapu.
Yes, yes, so true. So tapu is like you wouldn't enter into a urupa just to take photographs. If you did, it's likely that there will be a, I guess the law of karma. Well, there you go. There's a Sanskrit word already. The tapu is broken. That means that you haven't come into the urupa with the right intentions because it's a very sacred place where the bones of your people are buried. Which brings me to a really interesting dynamics that I've seen in my life story is people wander through cemeteries. They wander through them, public cemeteries. It's not something Māori do. We don't consider that to be an activity we would do without a lot of like, oh, are we allowed to go in there? You know, like the people in that urupa, we may not know them or may not be related to them. Therefore, we don't feel that we would take it as of right that we can just go in there and look at the headstones.
Right.
And take photos or even engage in a kōrero within that cemetery. Urupa are very different. Urupa are largely have been, which in Te Ao Māori, that part of death is totally, our sovereignty is held in the urupa, so we decide where the person is buried. You're not lined up with council regulations as to... You know about that, eh?
Well,
you know,
there'll be council regulations, and there's probably government regulations too about burying bodies.
Oh, there's lots of them, and there's far too many of them. They almost cripple people who are living when they want to bury their loved ones. They can feel quite crippled by the regulations
and the cost.
And the costs, so those things are what we call, you lose your sovereignty over your own people. One of the things Māori can definitely speak about quite clearly and openly is that we still dig our own graves. We literally dig our own graves with our spades, whether they're sharp or not, hopefully. And it's done by the young males, can be, and led by an elder. So led by an elder means like hopefully you got the right measurements. That's the main thing. And that when you do that, it's an honourable activity. You don't get a digger in. You don't. That's an insult. You don't get a council digger in to dig the hole for your mother or your father or your grandmother. That's just not what we would consider to be honourable way of burying our loved ones. You know, there's quite a big lot of differences. However, having said that, within the tapu and noa space, that whole ceremony around how the tupapaku, which is the person who has passed away, is dealt with, is really can be quite a big ceremonial challenge. People want certain rites. They want to have my friend, I think he called it a wake. Is a wake, is that a Welsh? What a wake.
That's an English word, because you're literally waiting to see if they wake up. That was
really.
They used to discuss. Here's what I heard. So I'm not Wikipedia or the Encyclopedia Britannica, but I did hear that there was a time when they dug up coffins and found their scratch marks on the lids underneath. This is a horrible thing to talk about at this time of the day. And they discovered that, or they realized that people had been ill, but they hadn't actually died. And so the wake was a time to see if they would wake back up. I've got to emphasize that I'm not an authority on this at all.
I don't know why they would dig up a grave for a start, but anyway, we don't do that.
I don't know the story about that either. But anyway, someone's texting me now. Is this
a wake? Is a ceremonial cultural?
Craig thinks wake is Irish.
Oh, kia ora. Yes, I would tautoko that. So it's an Irish ceremonial way of celebrating the life of a loved one that's passed away in a more personal setting. So in the lounge or in the house of a relation or where they actually lived.
Yeah.
We
did that with my father when he died.
Oh.
2011.
So, okay.
Yeah, he came back to the house for a while.
Yeah, and you know, it's such a beautiful honour, a way of honouring your whare, your home, to have your people come back and you make a space, you prepare this incredible, it's a ceremonial space for them to lie and farewell them, you know, and people come, the community comes and friends and relatives come to do so. Those are not offered in the same way in a funeral home. It's not the same ambience, is that the right word? The same sacredness.
It'll do.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Sacredness it's a very personal thing that belongs to the whānau pani, the bereaved family. But yes, and that's a very good example of tapua noa and how we express that in today's world. We need to keep reclaiming those spaces, whānau.
I've just looked up the word wake, and Kiora's got this. It says it's from an old English word, waku, I don't know how to say it, which means wake or watch. So the word vigil is in there as well.
Oh, vigilance, to give vigil.
Yeah, mourners keep attendance by the body of the deceased and are supposed to stay awake with the body. Well, this is what, so I don't know. Right. I don't know if this is the ultimate authority either. Yeah, okay.
it's a very beautiful offering if we can maintain and transform those ceremonies so we also hold the mana of our whānau, our extended whānau, the sovereignty. We give it away so easily. At birth, somebody else tells us how to do it, why we should do it, and that's, you know, unless you have these very incredible midwives who encourage you to be your own sovereign power. So that's at the entry, when you're coming into the world, and when you leave, you know, there's a whole discussions around tapua noa, being in a sacred space, and how you honour that, the honouring of those times. Because we're all going to pass away, and how is that going to unfold? Who's in charge of that, you know?
So how does tapu differ from noa?
So tapu is really to engage in more sacred words, offer karakia, pau, takutaku, more tiatia. Not that you don't in a noa space, but in a tapu space, the clarity around what those chants, it's a form of chanting, it's a form of honouring, it's a form of infusing the divine. I o matua te kore, there are many names that we honour that incredible divinity into our lives, and we have to give space for that. It's not like, it's nothing like going to church on Sunday. Could be, sorry, I didn't mean it that way. Could be, but we don't designate it to Sunday as being the tapu day, the tapu time. Every day has an opportunity for tapu to manifest.
And noa in comparison?
Noa is when you would break the tapu by eating food and chatting socially, about the day, about have common it's not a good word either. You have conversations with people that are not connected to so much connected to spirituality. You would talk across, you know, say, how are the kids? How are the children? How are you doing? That's noa. That means it's a, you know, you're going shopping is a noa activity.
Is it the, it's not the opposite of tapu?
No, they're part of the same coin.
Okay.
You flip it over. You flip it.
Well, it kind of is the, yeah, two sides of the same coin, different but the same.
Yes, it's a very fine transition, and often that also on the marae, as many of you may have experienced, will have experienced, you get called to have kai.
Mm.
You get called. You don't sort of walk in and go, I'm hungry. And you,
where's the food?
Yeah, and you might feel that, but the way that that tapu is broken is really an essential part of the breaking of tapu.
Mm.
So to you go, oh, we better not keep the cooks waiting, the ringawera. We better get into the kitchen. They've prepared this beautiful morning tea, lunch, dinner, all those nourishments for you. Please go and partake. Enjoy.
Okay. Yeah.
The pink Sally Lunds. Just put that in there.
People's mouths will be watering. And speaking of water, are we going to talk about why?
Yeah, I want to bring the water very, very much forward because I know there are what we it's come into my consciousness in that there are so-called people who speak about why in such a manner that they become experts. And there's a whole range of different ways you can approach it. You know, you can test water, right? You can get a
scientific testing. Yeah.
And you can what? Decide what the pH is of it testing.
You can decide if there's E. coli in it and that you shouldn't be swimming in the harbour.
Right.
This has been topical in the last year or so.
Right. Okay. So what happens there is you get the scientific information and then behind it is a whole story. Because how did the E. coli get there in the first place?
Well, the trouble is the trouble is they don't know that story. This is a literal
thing.
They
do.
Last October there was very high readings outside the museum and they investigated where that might have come from, but I don't think they ever found out.
They do. I'm gonna be really straightforward here. We do know that there are runoffs that go into our waterways that have absolutely poisoned our waterways. There are a whole combination of reasons. The type 1080 is one of those medicines, so-called rongoa, that are used on our maunga, on Karioi, at different times. There is also runoffs from the agricultural farming community that has been unmonitored, that has dangerously infected many waterways. And E. coli comes from that type of runoff. And we do know that it's poisonous and we do know that it's not a good idea to drink the water because of the long-term aspect. Long-term outcomes. Once you've got E. coli, you're pretty much, my understanding is you've got it for life.
So when I say they didn't know where it came from, they don't know what specific pipe on what specific day
that
it entered that specific place. Yeah. Because if they could find that out, they could shut the pipe off or something.
Yeah, and that's that whole conversation around how we use our moana, you know, when we pipe, we dig these pipes and we think, it's just runoff, it's going into that little stream. Well, that little stream called a manga goes to a awa, which is a bigger stream. Then that awa goes to an estuary, and then that estuary goes out to the mouth of the sea or the mouth of the river, and that flow is tidal. So it's a very big mistake to make that we think that this this runoff and these things that we are part of poisoning our way don't have a huge impact. They have huge impacts on the ecology of the waterways, Waiti, Waita, the transition from freshwater, so-called freshwater, to saltwater. I'm very passionate about this whānau because it's also an embodiment in terms of what we call the feminine holds a huge body of water in which it's a sacred place where the unborn child is. And that's connected to the way of the earth. Yeah, it's a really, it's a big kōrero, it's a beautiful kōrero, and I believe it belongs to women, that discussion around why, the sacredness of water, and because we really embody it so clearly as part of our birthing story. You know, we can't actually give birth or hold that space for a little human being unless we have this sacred way.
I think something your discussion brings up for me is because I referred before to they were looking for the specific pipe on the specific day that caused the specific problem for the really high E. coli reading last October. At no point has the suggestion been made that we should just fix everything out there. It was, you know, we're looking for that specific cause on that specific day, but we know we've still got problems. Every time it rains heavily, all our waterways become unswimmable in the Waikato region. So while they were looking for a specific cause, we know the general cause, and we're probably not doing enough yet. We're definitely not doing enough yet to solve the problem because we had a problem last October with heavy rain. So
yeah, well, those
going for the specific thing is like a red herring, it's a distraction. Or we couldn't find the specific pipe on the specific day. We know we've got big problems out there, and not being able to find the pipe on the day doesn't mean we give up. It means we go back to dealing with the wider problem.
Yeah, and we have given up. We don't pay enough attention. Mm. Why is the most important elemental part of our life, really?
I just had a drink now.
It's not just H2O. That's a scientific definition. It has many more elements within it, or that speak to us and to our wellness. You know, we in the Māori world call it waiora. You know, the river of life. You are my source of the river of life. So you can generate that beingness in yourself towards someone else, that you become the waiora, that well-being. That relationship that you have is directly related to that physical manifestation of water. I learned it on the periodic table as H2O, and it wasn't until I was very much into my adult years that I realised that it was much, much more than that. And then, you know, I just feel a sense of, what do I feel? I feel disappointment that we keep trying to defer, that we don't know how we poisoned ourselves, how we poisoned our rivers, but we do. We do. It's just a freaky thing, isn't it, to not admit that we are actually responsible. I mean, people say, oh, yeah, but the cows, you know. You own the cows.
Yeah, well, there are. I mean, there've been efforts made, I know, politically in the Waikato region to clean up the waterways in the rural areas, and there are conservative forces that try to water down the regulations every time that someone goes to do it. So it's slow progress. In another generation, they'll look at it again and they'll go, "Why didn't they just do what we're doing now?" But
yeah, it's a very powerful economic tool, agriculture. So it's unlikely to be brought up as having a problem towards the why. It's not going to be out. It's not going to come forward as a problematic field to solve something. No, because that hasn't happened yet. And agriculture has very much devastated the waterways in my opinion, I'm not a water scientist, but I do know a lot about why.
And it's interesting, if the word we used in English had a meaning like source of life, like why water seems to, and that's a rough translation, I know, but like if our English word had that implication in it, we probably would have treated it quite differently.
Yeah, the sacredness of water is something that I'm very passionate about, and we can turn it around. We can turn bad water into good water, if that's a phrase you can take on board. We can do that through karakia, and we use water in sacred ways. We use it. We have it available for what we call whakanoa, to free up spaces using water that's collected from maunga, from a particular puna. People still go to specific puna to get the water from there, the spring water from there for their children, for their families. Mm. And they're not about to share that openly because, you know, it's, they do, actually. They share it, but not, they don't put it on Facebook. Let's put it that way.
There was some spring water down by the scout hut, but that's been blocked off.
Oh, has it?
I think, yeah. And also our town...
That's the bore water, though. Is it spring?
Well, there was, but it's not anymore.
So it's not bore water?
I don't know what's there now. I've just been told that it's not worth going there anymore. I just remember going there years ago, 15 okay. or so years ago. The other thing that I'll see what your reaction to this is, our town supply comes from a spring.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we
can... And then they put the chlorine in it and other things. I don't know what other things.
Well, there's no fluoride,
they
right?
treat it. Not yet.
The not yet.
So
waiting with bated breath because of the story of fluoride, aren't we?
So I'll tell you what's happening with that is that
yes,
there is a government-level regulation now where the government, I think they've now given themselves the power, the Ministry of Health, to tell councils you have to put fluoride in that town's water. But our council has not yet been told that. They're aware of the regulations or the rules, but they haven't yet received a direction to do it, and our council said, well, we won't be doing it unless they directly tell us to do it for Raglan. So the council's in no hurry to do that, but if the word comes from up on high that they have to, then they will.
Yeah,
our town supply. Yeah.
My understanding is that in the world of dentistry, fluoride is considered a very important element for you, the health of, and I'd say if you have a dentist who does organic or whatever, and a dentist in the room, that they would say you should have fluoride in your water.
Well,
that's my understanding.
The fluoride needs to be applied topically, can be applied topically to the teeth, like just applied directly to the teeth. There's no need for us to drink it and put it in our bodies.
Thank you. I didn't realise that.
That's my, again, not the expert, but I mean, we get toothpaste. You put it on our teeth. You can get special toothpaste that you swish around and spit out. So,
okay, that's a way of receiving fluoride for the health of your niho, your teeth, your mouth. Mm. Okay, I'll accept that. But I'd say you won't find a dentist very easily that would generally. Is there a dentist listening that doesn't support fluoride in the water
I hope not.
Supply? Because, I don't think so. I think dentists are pretty much coached into saying that fluoride is really important for our teeth. How we receive it, of course, is...
It becomes one of those things that's a public health issue, and the health department is like, okay, we can tell people till we're blue in the face to use fluoride toothpaste. We've proved scientific evidence that it works, but they're not doing it enough. So for their own good, we'll put it in the water, and then they'll get it without us having to try, you know, without us having to go and knock on all their doors. So from that perspective, from the health department's perspective, they see that as that's the best way to achieve their aim.
Oh, because we're not listening. Because we're not behaving.
Same as when COVID happened, and
same as
they wanted everyone to have the vaccine, and not everyone was doing it, so they started using various techniques.
Mandating?
Well, I didn't want to say the M word, but even before that, you know, they were trying to scare people into
Using fear.
Yeah, there were fear tactics. I think that's pretty clear. And the, and the media was very much participating in that as well.
Yeah, fear tactics is a huge part of social media's gift.
Oh, well, they did that before social media. For vaccines and things
I'm
like that.
I'm not laughing at it. I'm just saying it's the truth. That fearlessness is a great opportunity. And, you know, wehi kore, which is fearlessness, you know, not to be afraid.
But rightly or wrongly, in terms of whether it was a good idea or not, that's the health department's, the ministry's view of how to achieve things.
Yeah.
As you mandate it for the population. And then you achieve that goal. We say, okay, we got 90% of people to have that, and we've saved this much money in theory and healthcare.
And then you polarise people, of course. Yeah, all
well, that happened a little bit, didn't it? A little bit of that went on in 21, 22. Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, do we want to mention Matariki's coming up on the 28th of June, but what comes first?
Te ihu o hene takurua. Takurua refers to Sirius. In some people's cosmology and astrology, it's a dog. You know, it's Sirius as a dog, as an image. I think that's a Greek mythology. And then you have Orion, which also has puanga on the left shoulder. Left shoulder of Orion is puanga, and putara is on the right ankle of that figure, that Greek figure in the cosmos. We're talking about a constellation here, which appears at this time of the year in winter, Hine Takurua, the Winter Maiden, and Puanga does this big call out to Matariki and her girls, Matariki. Oh, and apparently there's some boys in there too.
Well, they found some boys recently.
Very recent. There's actually hundreds of stars, people.
I guess if you zoomed in with a telescope, you would...
But it's a very unique constellation, which I'm so glad that it's been brought forward for us to acknowledge and celebrate. And you might be thinking, because of where it sits in cosmology and astronomy. We won't go astrology. Astronomy is where you look at the what is within the night sky and day sky. In Rangi Nui, and you make these connections as human beings living on the earth of their significance to the timing of what you do.
So the significance of Puanga is that it appears on the horizon before Matariki.
Yes, around the winter solstice, which is the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, it always appears. Prior to Matariki, to do the great karanga, sending out the call to the heralding of Matariki to come forward, to follow and to bring her amazing essence into focus as we go into a very special time of the year.
So the Matariki, the official date is the 28th of June. Is that the public holiday? Yeah, 28th of June is a public holiday. I don't know if that's the exact day that Matariki appears, though.
I think that's done according to astronomy, an astronomical knowledge.
I was just wondering if they like to put the holiday on a weekend. That was all. We have a bit of a thing for that, so we get a three-day weekend. And this is that we get a three-day weekend out of this. Yeah. So, well, and I don't have an answer to that right now.
No, Matariki is to generally bring our attention to what we know as takurua, hine takurua, which is winter time. And we have proposed for thousands of years in Te Ao Māori that's where you should start the year, there, at that point, because you're really coming into a time of sitting close to the fire. You light the fires. You come closer together in a sense of you huddle around this fire because it's cold, makariri. And then you have conversations because you're not working outside in the garden because it's wet and muddy. And so you can talk about going, reflecting on the year that's just passed. You can celebrate the harvest that you have, all the hard work that has been put in through the spring, summer months. And, you know, you talk about the storage of your kai and the pātaka, the kai pātaka, and you can also enjoy in a more leisurely way that harvest.
Mm.
It's not the only thing you do, though.
What else?
Well, you know, like, it's that time to reflect and also to farewell those who have, in an honourable way. We don't see Matariki as Orion, even though Tautoru is the belt of Orion, which is that those three stars. Tautoru is known in English as the belt of Orion. That particular constellation sits in a great waka, according to Māori.
Oh, okay, so that's the visualization of a,
the visualization
of a group of stars. Yeah.
Yeah, of very different constellations that line up their star maps. And Taramainuku, who is one of the chief of that waka, is directing the waka, this beautiful waka, and picking up all those who have passed away in the past, last week, last month, last year, and then does the cyclic journey and comes back, and this net has been created, a kupinga, and gathers all those who have passed and throws them up into the heavens, and they become fresh stars, the newest stars in the sky.
Okay, so that's the...
Yeah, so no need to grieve, whānau. I mean grieve. Sorry, I didn't mean it that way. You can see your tupuna who have recently passed, they become stars in the heaven. It's not no need to grieve. It means that they are then honourably reflected. There they are when you look to the heavens. They become light beings of another realm.
Okay.
Mm.
All right.
Yeah, that's a big story.
Yeah. And but that's the end of our story this morning.
Yes. So, ngā mihi ki a koutou, ki a haumaru.